Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll get to CJ Stroud here talking to Jalen Johnson in just a second. My favorite text in the aftermath of the CJ Caleb advice scene at midfield, where people are kind of upset with CJ that it felt like he was little broing somebody who he's basically within 3 weeks of age-wise, comes from Irwin, loyal listener. Says, the CJ thing marks the turning of the tide. With success comes disdain. I see this as a positive for the Texans.
Yeah, this is kind of like you and I have slowly turned into Pat Mahomes haters.
Yep.
That, and some of it is with all of the exposure that these guys get. It was the Netflix documentary Quarterback. That first gave us a look at Pat Mahomes, where I'm like, all right, I used to feel bad that this guy was saddled with his wife and brother who are annoying, but oh, Mahomes is just as annoying himself and just as self-centered and just attention hungry and craving as those other two satellites in his life.
Yes.
So yeah, now I despise him. He's not, yeah. So it's going to come. There'll come a time, as long as CJ continues to perform well. And if he is so burdened by winning several Super Bowls, especially, then people will start to dislike him.
Yes. That is one thing I've learned in my decades of watching the NFL. One thing fans do not like: Super Bowl winning quarterbacks that are not their own quarterback.
Yes. If there's one thing Americans hate, it's success.
Success, yes. That's not theirs. Yes. Other people's success. All right, let's get to CJ. So here was CJ Stroud mic'd up chatting with Bears Pro Bowl cornerback Jalen Johnson during the game.
Yeah, during the Bears game.
It was during a stoppage. Here's what it sounded like.
Stop telling your secrets on Richard Sherman podcast, dude.
What you mean?
The palms, look. You ain't slick, brother. You ain't getting me. You ain't getting me.
Okay. Palms look is what he said there. That's a defensive
look. Yeah, so palms look. Yeah, palms look is just, it looks like cover two, but instead, usually in cover two, if you guys think about broadcasts you've seen, it's okay, the cornerback's going to, they're going to take the wide receiver on the outside and keep everything, push everything to the inside, all of that. Palms, they switch it up a little bit. So there was this, so immediately I thought, okay, well, I got to go figure this out. And I went and I watched the Richard Sherman podcast where he's interviewing Jalen Johnson. And it's this specific play that you're going to hear Richard Sherman discuss, but this is Jalen Johnson picking up Josh Dobbs in the Minnesota game last year.
Dobbs protected and picked by Jalen Johnson. Johnson on the return will take it down inside the 40.
Okay.
So, and I didn't send the cut that had, basically Troy Aikman says, well, yeah, you see, Josh Dobbs got to realize that's cover two, and that Jalen Johnson did a good job of stabbing inside and faking and looking like he wasn't in cover two and then coming back. So that's what he thought. And remember, this is why you always got to take everything with a grain of salt with colored commentators. Richard Sherman, a man who knows coverages himself, discussed that play with Johnson on his podcast.
Ooh, I've seen you make quite a few plays disguising that cover two, jumping down, coming out the flag, going to the seven.
Just funny, the pick that you talk about, we were really in palms. So
you did that out of palms?
I promise you.
Yeah, so it's a much longer clip where he
is. I watched the long version of it today.
I'm going to do a video on this, but basically, Jalen Johnson is supposed to jump that underneath route, but he was going to be super aggressive with it. But so Josh Dobbs, the poor kid actually made the right read on that play. It was just Jalen Johnson making an incredibly athletic. He was so good on that play physically that he came back and ended up. Because he got back there so fast, he made it look like he had just duped Josh Dobbs, the rocket engineering major from college.
Literal rocket engineer, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what CJ was talking about. And he's saying, hey, don't give away your secrets. Now, there's multiple things that CJ could do with that because Jalen Johnson basically had gone into detail about how he knew that route combo and he didn't just want to make a tackle on the short route. He wanted to either have a huge hit or potentially a pick. I think that's the part where CJ's thinking like, all right, I know the way you operate now, and I know that if we have similar route combos that I might be able to take advantage of your aggressiveness, or I got to watch out for your aggressiveness. My big thing was, man, all right, CJ, don't tell these guys that this is what you're doing.
Yeah.
If people are giving you secrets, don't let them know that you're learning their secrets by podcast. I would say the same thing to Jalen Johnson. It drives me crazy when I hear defensive players talking about these tips they have or little tricks of the trade on podcasts. Because, dude, what are you doing? You're taking money out of your own pocket there. You're giving people the answers to the test. These podcasts are so damn seductive.
Yep.
These guys are giving up way more information than they need to.
It's a really, really tough human instinct to not want to be the smartest guy in the room when you know something especially when you feel like you've decoded it, you know what I mean, like you didn't just stumble into it. Like CJ, CJ using a podcast as some version of film work on a guy, I think probably to CJ feels like, man, I'm kind of operating at a different level than some of these other quarterbacks.
By which measure it also might have been in his mind, he might be thinking like, I'm going to mess with him right now and let him know that, hey, whatever, you know, little tendencies or anything that you think I don't have. Yeah. Because, it's one of those things where, again, it's just funny when I see people break down film on the internet and everything, super, super smart people. The only weakness they have, if they haven't played the game, is that they really don't understand how much improvisation or how many mental errors there are on any given play. To where you have Troy Aikman and Richard Sherman both thinking that that was one coverage or call, when in fact, Jalen Johnson had just, and didn't even make a mistake necessarily, he just made a super aggressive recovery to go back out and help out the free safety who was supposed to have that guy. And people were giving him credit for duping the young quarterback, you know? But you can use that to your advantage. If people want to give you credit for doing that, then yeah, by all means, let them think that that's how diverse we are and that's all the things that we'll do and you got to be on guard all the time.
Now, on the one hand, there's something to that. There is also something to, though, like, hey, man, it's like you don't have to tell the other team everything that you're thinking about, you know, that you're using these podcasts as a way to get intel and stuff like that. So there's that. But I will say this, like my overriding emotion now after listening to it, let's listen to it one more time. This is C.J. Stroud and Jalen Johnson on the field.
Stop telling your secrets on Richard Sherman podcast, dude.
What you mean?
The palms, look, you ain't slick, brother. You ain't getting me. You ain't getting me.
Okay, that's my quarterback right there. Like, there is part of it. Like, think about the rest of C.J. Stroud's draft class right now. Will Levis is shoveling balls to the other team in just completely, utterly stupid fashion. Bryce Young might be ruined. He's been benched. Anthony Richardson is one of the least efficient quarterbacks in the league and can't stay healthy. Our guy is rightfully talking trash to a Pro Bowl cornerback during a stoppage in play and not sounding outlandish for doing so. Like, instead, he just said, like, there's nobody that listens. Our criticism of that cut is just don't do that because you're giving him, you know, you're feeding the other team intel on your process. But at the core of it, nobody's criticizing C.J. Stroud for having the bravado to say that to Jalen Johnson. Everybody with C.J. Stroud's like, yeah, dude can back up his talk, you know?
Right. No, and that's where C.J. being a football nerd, it's one of the hardest things to figure out about quarterback prospects is everybody's really good at doing the Instagram hashtag stuff and everything and showing how much you're grinding and all of that. And college coaches, I think, generally will tell people, yeah, this guy works hard, he listens and everything. Like Bobby Sloak, when he would talk about C.J. Stroud last year at the end of the season and once this offseason, it was very telling the way he praised C.J., which was that he comes into the meeting and you can tell that he's really done the homework. That it's not, there's times when you're, as a teacher or as a coach, you know, you can tell if the kids have done the reading or not because they're at a different level already. They're not learning it as you're talking to them about it. They're like asking the right questions and everything. And I think with CJ, he's just kind of naturally wired to be a football nerd. And if there's podcasts out there where Richard Sherman is talking to defensive backs and they're giving away tricks of the trade, that CJ's drawn to that just naturally. So it doesn't, no matter how many hours he logs on his iPad, there's all that extracurricular work you do that just stacks up over time to where you get this database of things to work with. And I think now more than ever, there's just more resources for guys like CJ, or if Tom Brady were a young quarterback now,
yeah,
you know, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and those guys would be all over like, oh, wait a second. Defensive backs are just sitting there on the internet telling me how they operate. And this is stuff that, you know, like when I try to get questions about different things in coverage, I'll send stuff off to Aaron Glenn at times or other guys I played with to try to figure it out. It's been so cool to actually just now over the last few years just start going, I can Google it on, or I can search it on YouTube,
yeah,
and find out like three different guys talking about Palms coverage.
Right, on a podcast just, somewhere. Yeah,
you can't, like when you do, because you know, there's lots of stuff out there for high school and college coverages, but a lot of the tricks of the trade of the NFL, they've always been kept very close to the vest.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. It's really cool, but I also, as a defensive player, I wish they'd shut the hell up and stop doing it.
As a defensive player, like, and the segment started with me really wanting CJ, like, hey man, don't tell Jalen Johnson, like, you know what he's going to do based on the podcast. I think in the last 13 minutes, I've done a 180 on this thing. Let me just play it one more time.
Stop telling your secrets on Richard Sherman podcast, dude.
What you mean?
The Palms, look, you ain't slick, brother. You ain't getting me.
Okay, and there's part of me that thinks, and I think is what you were alluding to, like, yeah, CJ, you maybe settle down telling, and then there's part of me like, Jalen Johnson probably had that in his head for the next three plays at least after that, you know?
Yeah.
He's probably backpedaling going, what else does CJ see on a podcast?
The biggest thing, I think, is that in giving that, like, Jalen Johnson got away with making a, it wasn't even a mistake, but it led into his psychology of, I am really going to jump this route because I know what's coming. And so it betrayed a certain aggressiveness in the way he operates. But until he told Richard Sherman that, people just thought he was being crafty and, you know, he'd just taken a jab step and almost baited Josh Dobbs into making that throw.
Right.
When it wasn't necessarily that way. So, the big thing is guys aren't going to stop giving up their secrets on the internet.
No.
They're going to keep doing this on podcasts and everything.
Yeah.
It's going to be more and more and more. So in just, CJ kind of getting into his head in that moment was probably the right move.
Overall, the trend you're talking about where guys just go blabbing about how smart they are and what they do scheme-wise on a pod, I think overall this is a good trend for us here in Houston. Like that we have this guy as our quarterback. You know,
well,
like,
yeah.
And CJ's pretty dialed into all this stuff.
The same thing, remember in CJ's first interception in the preseason against the Patriots last year?
Yep.
That was another one where, in watching the film, Kurt Warner and others who watched that on film thought, oh, yeah, this is simple cover two, and the CJ can't make this mistake. When, after the game, the DB had done a really smart thing, which was he made it look like it was cover two, but in fact he was manned up on the on Dalton Schultz.
Schultz, yeah.
But Dalton Schultz was in the backfield, so the DB knows that he can give way more. He can align deeper than he otherwise would. And he told everybody.
So, told CJ on the field after the game.
Yeah, so the guy ends up coming up and playing. CJ had read cover two, just like Kurt Warner did when he was breaking the film down.
Right.
But CJ kind of got to get a little bit of insight into, like, oh, okay, this is the way it operates, and that I didn't make a stupid mistake. I didn't know enough about how this guy might be operating.
Yeah, I didn't account for it.
And I don't need to be, I need to understand that this can happen, that these guys are operating on a different mental plane. And a lot of the defensive backs are kind of, they're improvising as they go based on what they can and can't get away with.
You ever seen the movie Rounders? Matt Damon, the poker movie. Texter says, this subject is covered in the movie Rounders. When Matt Damon discovers Teddy KGB has a tell in the last final poker game there, and he normally you don't tell him, but Matt Damon did because he knew it would rattle him for the rest of the game.
Right, and if you
call
and also if CJ, you could look at it as psychological warfare of these guys going into a game and thinking they know what they know, but then also knowing that CJ has probably watched every interview that they've done.
Yes.
And I mean, this is something in the offseason. I don't know if you saw the interview a couple weeks ago of Tom Brady going through all of his files.
No.
And he had just like every game detailed notes about various defensive backs.
Literal paper files?
Yes. Yeah. That's like awesome. Like he's J. Edgar Hoover or something. He's got dossiers on all these people. And you build that up over time. Yeah. And I think now, again, if Tom Brady were a young quarterback these days, he'd have all this time in the offseason when you're just sitting around and you've got time to watch podcasts and you can just add to the dossier of things that you know about Jalen Johnson.
This is so good.
Different
for us.
Situations. And, you know, and those guys' brains, when it starts coming back, like, okay, yeah, there's times where we run an in-breaking route with a seven route on the backside. And this is how Jalen Johnson operates in those situations. And what are our tendencies on this? Okay, I know this is a guy who's going to be hyper aggressive in this situation. Then you get to that next level of, you know, the really good veteran players, they'll look ahead a few weeks.
Yeah.
Like saying, knowing that they're going against Darrell Revis or Ray Lewis, and think, all right, we're going to do a couple things that we know that those guys are going to pick up on.
Yeah.
And then we're going to use it against them because these guys will have a tendency. And their defensive coordinators will be like, look, this is, Sean, as a player, it's the worst when you go into a game sometimes. And your defensive coordinator is like, these guys in this situation are 90% run. Yeah. And you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
we're dialing up a run blitz and we are going to get torched.
We are screwed. You know we're in the same division with Peyton Manning, right?
You're looking at your defensive coordinator and on the other side they got like North Turner and you're like, this guy thinks he's smarter than North Turner. Oh, crap.
Hey, speaking of which, the two QBs, let's hear from the two head coaches on the opposing quarterback. What does Kevin O'Connell think of C.J. Stroud? And we'll get to D'Amico Ryan's first thoughts on Sam Darnold. We'll take a look across enemy lines here a little bit on Payne and Pendergast. That's up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Kevin O'Connell is the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. Here he was yesterday when he was asked, what have you seen? What do you like? What do you think of C.J. Stroud?
First and foremost, the thing that stands out the most is his arm talent. I mean, this guy is making throws in and out of the pocket that the list, you know, if you make a list of the guys capable of making some of the throws, it's not going to be a very long list that CJ makes. And then I think he's got, it's never, ever seems too big for him. From the first time he went out there to now, he seems incredibly prepared. So he's obviously got a great process throughout the week. The experience of playing and leading that team is only making him more comfortable in his role. And then, you know, I just think he's a guy that played in a lot of big games, been coached really well there. I know Gerard's doing a great job with the quarterbacks there in Houston. And I just, you know, I can't say enough about what shows up to me on tape. I mean, I've been like everybody else. If it's on TV, we're not playing. I've seen him make a lot of big-time throws and plays and games. But then when you dive into the tape and you see the snap-in and snap-out impact he has, it's pretty remarkable for such a young player.
Yeah, I think the cool thing with Kevin O'Connell is that he has a lot of familiarity, obviously, with the system and coach for McVay and everything. And I think that he can probably recognize the steps in the process. So when O'Connell says he's prepared throughout the week and he's absorbing the lessons, and this going back to Kubiak is what Kubiak would always say in the, you know, the ancestor to this system, is you just want to be sure that the quarterback always has an answer within the play design. And it's just a matter of, all right, figuring out what is the defense actually doing and where is the answer in this play design. I think CJ, much more so than just about every other second-year quarterback, shows signs of that, and Kevin O'Connell can recognize it. So it's I guess the thing that would make me most nervous about the fact that the Texans are facing a team in Minnesota that defensively really put a hurting on Brock Purdy and the 49ers last week. Like, Flores had the input of Kevin O'Connell and the way that everything operates. And, you know, Kevin O'Connell is going to be able to identify the way the Texans are operating and how CJ is operating. That's the chess match this week between all of the coordinators that have so much familiarity with this scheme and whatnot is really fascinating.
Yeah, does the fact that they played the 49, the Vikings played the 49, where does that fit into the chess game that the Texans get to see Brian Flores' defense going against that offense literally 7 days before?
Yeah, I think it helps CJ. I think it really does. I think that if you had flip-flopped this, it would have benefited the 49ers more than it hurt him. So it helps the Vikings that they're seeing a scheme like this 2 weeks in a row. It helps them defensively. But I think for CJ, he's able to see Brock Purdy a few times. I think made the right decision, but he was a beat late with it. He was slow with it, and it led to either errant passes or incompletions. And there was a little bit of hesitancy there. And that's not a slight on Brock Purdy necessarily, but CJ can learn by proxy with that and hopefully just be a little snappier with it. And so it's not even a Brock Purdy versus CJ Stroud thing. And then likewise, you know, and again, you can turn this into an advantage either way, but I do think that CJ's better equipped to learn these lessons than Sam Darnold is at this point. I think that when it comes down to the quarterback IQ, CJ operates at a higher level than Sam Darnold playing for the Vikings, and I think you end up with an advantage on the quarterback side of things.
Counterpoint on the text page. Flores' defense attacks with their pass rush, and that's what we suck at as an offensive line. Yeah. I think Minnesota's going to kill us by 2 touchdowns. We won't have a running game, and we won't have a passing attack.
I think this is where, and that's where the challenge is. Flores' defense also, in theory, because of all the things they do at the line of scrimmage, in theory, you should have quick hitters available to you. And I think some of the just the dinking and dicing and slicing up, if CJ is reading things properly and if he's not fooled by some of the misdirection and disguising that Flores does, that's your run game this week. The short passing game might end up being the run
game.
Yeah,
so I like that.
Bobby Slowik might break type and not have nearly as many rushing attempts, might not sacrifice rushing attempts to set up the play action. It might be a lot more of maybe what you saw early on versus the Colts, except but with fewer runs.
Okay, we don't have D'Amico on Sam Darnold. Something happened with that file. But we do have D'Amico on Justin Jefferson, who is basically the passing attack for the Minnesota Vikings. Anyways, here is D'Amico Ryans on the best receiver in the NFL.
Justin Jefferson is as good as any wide receiver I've seen. Talk about a guy who everyone knows going into the game, like you have to try to stop number 18, but it's easier said than done. He still finds a way to make plays. He's double teamed. He's clouded. Like it really doesn't matter. He's an exceptional talent. And he shows up every single week, you know, providing explosives for their offense. And we know he's the guy that gets their offense going. So have our hands full there. He's a tough out, and it's gonna be hard the entire game to try to stop him.
Yeah, and I think that's where I'll be really surprised if D'Amico blitzes as much of this week as they did last week. Last week they were facing a rookie quarterback and a banged up wide receiving core. And I don't think that they don't, no offense to DJ Moore, but he's no Justin Jefferson. So right. I think that I would expect that D'Amico's gonna maybe blitz more than he typically does. They might just blitz a lot more this year in general than they did last year, where they didn't blitz much at all. But I'll be surprised if it's an extremely blitz-heavy offense this week. I think they gotta be sure they try to take Justin Jefferson, or limit Justin Jefferson as much as possible.
Do you think, is this a Stingley
yes.
follows him around situation?
Yeah, if he's following DJ Moore, then he's definitely following Justin Jefferson, I think.
I saw some people speculating yesterday. I guess there was a cut from Belichick over the weekend, either on one of the 15 different shows that Belichick does. If he's not on the Manning cast, he's on McAfee. If he's not on McAfee, he's on Inside the NFL. Belichick's got a lot of stuff on his plate. Somewhere along the way, and I don't think they were talking specifically about this game, but he may have been talking about Justin Jefferson, but he said what they used to do with somebody with a marquee wide receiver like that is they would double team that guy, put their best guy on the number two guy. In this case, it would be Jordan Addison. Yeah. And then the number three is the guy that's got to eat against you. In this case, it would be Jalen Naylor for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they take it. I mean, Belichick's a master at taking away the best threat or best player. And in that, you double team. You use two of your. You use Lassiter and a safety to double team Justin Jefferson, and then you can completely shut down the number two guy with Derek Stingley. And maybe they do that at times. I don't know. I think right now a lot of it is, all right, how much do they trust Kamari Lassiter? And, you know, maybe Kamari Lassiter has started to play at a level where they feel better about just keeping those guys on their normal sides.
Yeah.
And you handle it that way. So D'Amico's surprised us a couple of times as a defensive coordinator. Last year, it was when he just flat out said before the Browns game that, no, Stingley won't travel with the best receiver. That's just not how we operate. And then he traveled with Amari Cooper. And so last week, he blitzed more than he's ever blitzed since he's been with the Texans. And, yeah, I could totally see them. I think Lasseter is getting to the point where they probably feel like they can mix it up throughout the game.
Yeah.
And they just don't want the Vikings to know exactly what they're going to be doing on any given down. So I think there will be times where Derek Stingley travels with Justin Jefferson, and there's going to be other times where they just do it with coverage.
It is fun seeing these graphics that pop up on social media with Stingley and Lasseter on there, and then their stats underneath it. Like, statistically, this is, and I know they were fortunate in the Indianapolis game. Those numbers could have looked a little different if Anthony Richardson drops one or two of those in the bucket to A.D. Mitchell.
Yeah.
But that happens in every game. Like right now, this is statistically the best pair of corners in the NFL two games in.
That's the thing you can't forget is that, look, this is Sam Darnold's no Anthony Richardson in terms of his athleticism, but the Vikings can run the ball. Aaron Jones is averaging 5+ yards per carry right now.
Yep.
And that's the stuff that gets the Texans in trouble. When they've got their back seven, when they've got their coverage guys with their eyes in both the backfield, and they lose track of the deep ball. It's the mental errors that I worry more about than the physical errors at this point. We're less than 2 weeks removed of the Texans having some really bad errors on the back end. And Sam Darnold is a lot more capable. He's a better quarterback than Anthony Richardson is.
Yes.
He's not physically gifted the same way, but he's a better quarterback than Anthony Richardson.
He's a better,
at least so far this season.
He's a better overall thrower of the football.
Yeah.
Richardson would win a distance throwing contest, but Darnold makes at least one of those two A.D. Mitchell throws in that game.
I think he's more consistent when playing in this scheme, and he's just seen more football than Anthony Richardson. He's not as green as Anthony Richardson.
J.J. Watt was on Pat McAfee yesterday. J.J. weighed in on two pieces of audio this week that we've had a whole lot of fun with, including one we've had fun with today. What does he think of C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams' interaction? And what does J.J. Watt think of D'Amico Ryan's discussion about the Bears' sideline demeanor from Sunday night? This is good stuff from J.J. Watt we've got coming up for you next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. This was D'Amico Ryan's on Monday talking about the Bears, and after Azeez Alshire really laid the wood to Caleb Williams, legally in that game, by the way. It was a legal hit. But the Bears took great offense to it and surrounded Azeez Alshire on their sideline. And Azeez was left with no choice but to punch somebody in the face over there. That's how I choose to look at it.
It was, yes, to punch the guy in the face who was standing furthest away from him.
Right. He had no choice. Here was D'Amico Ryan's on that whole sequence.
From my perspective, seeing Azeez, he had a big hit on the quarterback, and everyone goes, everyone gets a little antsy when the quarterback gets hit on the sideline, but if the quarterback stays in, he's gonna get hit. Like, and now I think everybody's a little sensitive when there are big hits in the league. Like, we still play a physical game, and you're gonna get hit hard if you're playing against us. That's just how we operate here. And what happened after that, Azeez is, of course, he's surrounded by a lot of their players and also some staff, and they are surrounding him. We got people pushing Azeez and so we have to, as the game, we have to be better, right? From protecting all players involved, especially when something happens on the opposite sideline, like, just have to be better. And we know, from Azeez's perspective, we, can't throw punches or anything like that. But just overall, we just have to be able to protect players, and it goes both ways. When you got guys surrounding one of our players and ununiformed staff that's surrounding, and in that little mix-up as well, like, that's a problem, and we have to get it fixed.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Bears staffers that were surrounding him, the assistant coaches and whatnot, I feel like it didn't look like they were actively going after Alshire or anything, but I think maybe what D'Amico's getting at is that they need to try to de-escalate the
push
situation.
Push their guys back.
Yeah, be the proverbial adults in the room, I suppose. It's just, keep it from escalating into something else.
Yeah.
But also, at the end of the day, that was just such an idiotic hit for Caleb Williams to take. Yeah. When you watch, he like slows up.
Yeah.
And just, I feel like he, I don't know what he was thinking. Yeah. That's not even like a college football thing. He slowed up and opened himself up to that
hit. Yeah, he deserved it.
He could have easily sidestepped
it. He deserved it.
I don't know if he thought that he was going to dupe Alshire into taking the wrong angle or something.
Yeah,
he very much deserved to get plastered the way he did on that.
I like the way D'Amico called the other 31 teams around the league soft. That's how I heard it. You know, he's like, hey, everybody's getting awfully sensitive about these hits. You know, when you play the Texans, you're going to get hit hard. Don't know if you've heard about it. Have you all heard of Swarm before, okay? That's what Swarm is. Here was J.J. Watt on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. You can imagine what J.J. Watt thought of his former teammate's answer to the Aziz Alshire question.
To Aziz's credit, you know, people don't know how you're going to act in the situation when it pops up. He's outnumbered 10-15x on their sideline, and he's still headbutting people. So I think they learned a lot about Aziz.
You couldn't have a better way to just slide in. Yeah, he shouldn't have punched a guy, but everything else around it was exactly what you just... Like, yeah, no, he definitely shouldn't have punched the guy, but I'm going to make this sound as great as it can possibly sound for my guy, and he nailed it. Perfect answer.
D'Amico handles this exactly how every player in the NFL would want their coach to handle it, which is why they'll probably continue to get big-name players. They want to come play with C.J. Stroud. They want to come play for D'Amico Ryans. Houston, very popular city, obviously. Yep. Great time, great place. It's like Houston, Texas might be a wagon for a little bit.
I love how that, every time with McAfee, it comes down to how miserable he is. Well, he doesn't sound miserable there. I think he actually likes the Texans, but I think he laments the fact that they're in the same division as his beloved Colts. Like that.
Yeah.
McAfee tying that specific incident to the Texans are going to be able to continue to get big name free agents for the next 10 years.
That play right there, by the way, I mean, that goes down as a sack. And it shouldn't have been. I mean, for one, that was one thing where Caleb Williams, if he had handled it a little differently on the sideline, he could have gotten veteran quarterbacks as a way of helping their offensive line out are going to figure out a way to get past the line of scrimmage on that.
Yeah.
Either that or at the very least, don't take a hit. One of those two things. The third, the least. The desirable situation there, taking that hit because Alshire just rocketed over to the sideline. I think that was a little bit of a welcome to the NFL moment for Caleb Williams, and that, oh, these things just close. These distances close really, really fast in the NFL, and I didn't realize that getting hit was even an option when I started taking off towards the sideline.
I didn't get hit in the Stanford game when I did this last year. You know,
some of Caleb Williams as a runner in that game reminded me of a young Reggie Bush, where it took Reggie Bush a full couple years to understand that he's not going to just simply beat guys to the edge anymore. And he had to learn that lesson. It took him a long time to learn it. Like, dude, no, you got to get upfield and go at some point because these guys can run. So, I think there's definitely this Texans defense feels way more like what D'Amico Ryans is probably envisioning than last year's did. Last year they made stabs at it, but this year, man, they're just big hits all over the place.
They got hitters, man. They got hitters, no doubt about it. J.J. Watt talked about the topic du jour, C.J. Stroud giving advice to Caleb Williams after the game. Just to reset, since it's only 12 seconds long, here's what it sounded like with C.J. and Caleb talking at midfield.
Good job out there, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, keep going. Stop taking those hits. Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yep.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
All right. So, yeah, but just the come here. You're right. Saying come here is what got everybody. Like, hey, man.
Yeah, come here.
What I got to say is important. Get over here. Yeah, that's how it's being perceived. You know,
John Harris, we had played this audio earlier, but what John Harris says, he finds it fascinating that everybody's focused on Caleb and CJ when in that same. So Bears fans are upset with CJ. How dare he? How dare he speak down to our quarterback, kind of quarterback?
Yep.
When in the exact same mic'd episode, in the same mic'd up episode of CJ Stroud, CJ just exposed Jalen Johnson for giving away his secrets on podcasts.
Trade secrets, man. Yeah.
Shouldn't you guys focus, maybe worry about you, maybe worry about actually all those mistakes that Caleb Williams made. Maybe worry about the fact that Jalen Johnson is helping out opposing quarterbacks going on podcasts.
Here's a really weird thing. It's a weird hill to die on as a Bears fan or somebody taking up for Caleb. Like, the only person that should really care about how that was perceived is Caleb Williams, you know, like
this is what it is right now. It's the way that as a Rockets fan, you found yourself in the position of defending Dwight Howard and you're like, no, it's not as weird as everybody says it is. I mean, it's weird, but it's not as weird as everybody says it is.
Yeah.
Or Harden as well.
Yeah,
now, Harden isn't actually, I mean, both these guys are great players, way better in their respective sports than Caleb Williams is right now.
Yeah.
But there is a part where you just look, I'm going to ride or die with this dude because he's our guy.
No, you're right. It's sports. You're so right. Here's J.J. Watt with his take on that interaction and the reaction to the interaction of C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams.
Yeah, so I go both ways on this, and this is a tough one for me because I see both sides of this. I mean, we all saw, obviously, what C.J. said to him, trying to impart some wisdom, pass along some things that he learned in his first year. And Caleb taking it, maybe not as intently listening as some people would have loved to see, but I'm on both sides of this. Number one, I love that CJ is trying to pass along some info, trying to help a guy out, trying to lift him up after a tough game. But at the same time, I do understand the other side of this with Caleb. I look at it kind of as that Mamba mentality where, like, we just lost the game. Like, that's kind of where I was at on jersey swaps and things like that. I mean, even when I played against my own brothers, we lost the game, and obviously we want a picture in our uniform, but, like, I wasn't stoked to take the picture. I wasn't, like, excited and smiling and super happy to take the photo. I just think that there is something to that old-school mentality where it's, hey, we're not friends out here. Like, this isn't the time to be best buddies and to do all that. So I understand and respect that. I also know that we're in a different generation where jersey swaps are normal, where guys are friends with players all over the league, where, you know, they train together in the off seasons and things like that. But I don't hate if a guy after a game is like, nah, I'm not feeling it, man.
JJ, you're going to have to take a side. You're not going to make it in this business if you say, I can see both sides of it. You got to pick
one. It's hard. It's especially hard for JJ because, you know, Kalia played in Chicago for 3 seasons, I think. Yeah. And so there's if I put myself in JJ's shoes, I'm probably like, man, people really like us in Chicago. Do I want to bring down hate? Kalia's social media feed is going to be a disaster for the next 72 hours.
Maybe.
If I really go in on Caleb. Maybe. I don't know. And JJ's in a spot. Look, JJ's not, JJ doesn't want to be Skip Bayless, I don't think. I don't think he embraces the hate necessarily. And it is genuinely one of these deals where I don't think you don't have to take sides here. I can totally see why Caleb Williams in that moment might not be all that receptive given the situation and everything. But that doesn't mean that because of that CJ has to be the bad guy.
Right.
It's Chicago's insistence on, or some of these radio hosts and whatnot in Chicago, their insistence on turning CJ somehow into the bad guy for giving advice here to their quarterback who as of yet has sucked, okay? I'm not saying he's going to suck forever, but as of yet he's sucked. So maybe pick your battles on like what exactly the issues are here. And the defending, you are being part of the problem, Chicago sports fans and radio hosts. You are pulling him into your bosom and letting Caleb Williams sob into your effeminate sweater is what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're just basically, dude, you're mollycoddling him.
You've never had a good quarterback in the history of your franchise. You're the most QB thirsty city in the NFL for decades and decades and decades now. And now an accomplished defending reigning AFC Offensive Rookie of the Year wants to give a little encouragement and advice to your guy, and you're taking umbrage with this?
I'm guessing a lot of Chicago radio hosts and sports fans hate the idea of a participation trophy. You know what that Heisman Trophy is, as far as what it matters for being an NFL quarterback?
Participation.
It's a participation trophy.
Yep.
What are you hanging? You want Caleb to go out there on the field with his Heisman Trophy to remind CJ that Caleb won the Heisman Trophy, and all CJ has done is played an entire NFL season and been Offensive Rookie of the Year?
That's it.
So you can't
you.
Take advice? Yeah.
Thank you. Good night. One metric that shows you, a different metric, shows you that you do not mess with C.J. Stroud, and also another metric that shows, man, Houston is at the top of the NFL world in this number. I'm not talking about the Texans. I'm talking about you, Houston. The Houstonians out there are at the top of the world in this particular measurement. We will get to that coming up next.